Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Luke Hodge runs our leadership portfolio on a Wednesday. Hodgie, welcome.
Morning, Jared.
It's a set of captains with a bit on their minds, I reckon, this Wednesday.
Yeah, as always at the start of the year, you wish after a long pre-season that you get off on the right note, and there's been a few clubs that have surprised us. You look at St Kilda, you look at Essendon, but then there's also the clubs that don't play up to the expectations of themselves, their supporters, of all the AFL supporters. So, yeah, there's a few there scratching their head at the moment.
Put us in the boots of Marcus Bontempelli as a starting point after two really ordinary performances.
Yeah, with that one, you sort of look at the first round against Melbourne and think, well, maybe Melbourne is just a really good team. And then you look at the second performance against St Kilda, and it's like, oh, they were just outplayed. They couldn't get enough of the ball, the composure with the ball, trying to go too fast. And St Kilda just squashed him defensively, just squashed him. So you're sitting back going, I think Bont would have thought with the people who they brought in a Jones and a Lob with short up each end. But they lost a Dunkley and a Hunter. And we all sit back going, their midfield was wide enough that they could lose a few midfielders and it's not going to affect them as much. But the performance that they're playing at the moment, and I don't think they've got a lot of injuries that are going to have a major impact. So it's more down to the style of football. And I think that goes down to Bont to, I don't know, compose them, I guess, get them back to the football they were playing at times last year and definitely late in the season in 2021.
So what are his priorities? It's a 5-day turnaround as captain. What can you do? What should you do?
It's going back to, I'd be speaking a lot with Beveridge, with the coaches, understanding, just so they're on the same page of what the message is to the boys. Because when you get into stages like this, you want to make sure it's the one message coming out. You don't want a coach saying one thing and the captain saying something else just because they feel that we're doing two things right and wrong. So you've got to be making sure that every message that goes to the players is clear, and for the players going into training and going into a game, their clarity on what the small focuses are. And that might be winning the contested ball or winning the ball. Or actually, I think over the two games, they've had minus almost 70 uncontested marks. So that's clearly shown that they're not manning up. So you've got to go in with some small little targets that we need to focus on, which takes out the rest of the doubt in the team.
Yeah, so you'd be absolutely aligned with the coach, and then what do you do with the player group? So are you, I'm so interested on where the lead, say the issue is that they aren't trying to their full capacity. So they thought they were, but they're not, right? What rests with the captain there?
Well, I think that's where you've got to reassure that, hey, it is a long season, and you've got to reassure that it goes back to sort of what I was just saying about the clarity. Sometimes when players come out, they're not trying to not man up. They're not trying to play bad football or lose a contest or lose games. Sometimes it comes down to simplifying the mindset. And early in the season, you come off a big pre-season and everyone's just jumping. You look at Brisbane Lions round one. They were all over the shop because they were not thinking about the small little things that make them a good side. And it looks like the Doggies are doing the same. As a captain, you need to bring him in and just make sure. I'd go through and say, okay, everyone, say one thing that you're going to focus on this weekend just to block out all the other things that can happen. You can't help the uncontrollables. What am I going to focus on? What am I going to bring to this team this week, which is going to improve my effort, which is going to help my teammate better, which is going to make us better as a group? It's about clearing out the fog and having clarity about your role and what you can do this week to make our performance a lot better than what we've seen the first 2 weeks.
Can you remember weeks like this?
A lot of them.
Yeah.
But there's so many. And that's the thing is, people look back and go, oh, how in 10 weeks, if they were going to win the next eight games, people aren't going to remember the first 2 weeks of the season. So football is a big roller coaster, and it's how you handle the lows which will shoot you back up top and being back on top of the roller coaster again. So, look, they're going through a flat spot, but as we said, footy can turn very quickly, and it's up to the leaders of that football club to – help build the confidence and make sure that their performance this weekend or this Thursday against the Lions, because I'm sitting back going, everyone's talking about the Lions are clear favourites, which they probably are with the football they play, but the Western Bulldogs at Marvel Stadium, at home, on a quick deck under the roof, they're not easy beats there, and that's what they've got to be telling themselves, because they're gonna be trying to pounce and jump the Lions, thinking that they'll be probably patting themselves on the back after a pretty convincing performance last Friday night.
So you'll be there on Thursday night. What do you reckon? Are you holding faith in the? So you've made the case, but are you holding faith?
When you got blokes like Bontempelli, and you look through the list that they have throughout there, the midfield's a libber. You know that he's got a lot of fight. Bont's there. Treloar's obviously a question mark whether he'll get back. McRae as well. They've got the group there that can dominate a midfield and get the ball in their forward line. It's just whether the Lions, they can match the intensity of what the Lions showed Friday night. So can you mount a case? 100% you can mount a case for them. It's round two. I still sit back and go, I've dropped off a little bit from them, just their attitude, but that can turn around. And as I said, a little bit of soul searching, a little bit of reflection of what we've done the last 2 weeks, they can bounce back this Thursday night without a shadow of a doubt. It'll be a good, and you know it's going to be a quick game. Lions want to move the ball fast, so do the Bulldogs. It's going to be a sling shootout, and when it is a game like that, anyone can win.
What of Tuk Miller and Jared Witts, do you think? So they've had too many weeks like this, the Suns. Sometimes I wonder, does anybody care enough to get riled up about them? This is not the start of the season that Gold Coast would have envisaged. They were really poor against Sydney, and then they got overrun by Essendon. And it's a bit. We'll need some weeks to totally understand where that loss sits.
With this one, I had high hopes for the Gold Coast this week, this year. I thought that this was the year that they were going to. They missed King last year, and he was such a big vocal point. And you could understand why they had patches last year, but they've got a full list. They've got a solid list. Who things you heard coming out of Gold Coast was nothing but praise for the preseason. But the three performances that we've seen from them this year, one being the GWS game in the preseason, where feedback that I heard from that they were just non-competitive, which from a young team trying to emerge, that's the last thing. If their skill wasn't up to it, you can probably understand that, or if they accuracy in front of goal, but competitiveness, that wasn't there. And for your last hit out before round one, it's concerns for a young group. You can understand a team that's a senior side who will just take it easy because we can flick the switch for next week. A young team like Gold Coast need every opportunity to come up against a side. They need to put their best foot forward to prove to one another that they can match it. They do that against GWS. And then Sydney was very similar. And they've had a history of beating Sydney the last couple of years. Stewie Jew knows Sydney's game style pretty well, but they were non-competitive again. And then when push come to shove in the third quarter, they were up, and all of a sudden there was a fight there, and Essendon wanted it more. When you looked at the leaders on who stood up, who was going to take charge of this game, who was going to win this game, it was the Essendon players that wanted it more and had the belief that they could do it. And I think that's a big thing for Gold Coast. They were in a position to win that game. But the belief, it looks like the belief isn't there. Where the Scots come in and change the mindset of the Essendon boys, they willed themselves and they wanted that win, and they got it.
Put yourself in Paddy Dangerfield's leadership position right now.
He'd be sitting back going, this is a pretty tough caper, but what we know from Geelong, they've had a lot of changes. They've had a lot of blokes that are out at the moment. You go through their injury list: Mitch Duncan, Henry, Colajasny, Menengola, Stanley probably missed this week, Tommy Stewart, Hawkins no preseason and looks injured, but is playing because he probably have to play this week because Cameron looks like he's sore. They know that their best can match it, and you listen to Chris Scott. You just got to feed off what Chris Scott's saying. He's not flustered. They're a very relaxed club down there, but they know that. They'll have to lift the intensity, and it's not as if they've been flogged in both games. They've had opportunities to win both games. They've just fallen short, and I think that's because of the polish of the blokes that aren't there at the moment. But there's no doubt they'll be doing a little bit of soul searching, but I don't think Danger, Chris Scott, or the guys are going to be that concerned at this stage because we know what they can produce.
Wouldn't want to lose on Sunday on the Gold Coast?
No, you wouldn't want to. And that's another one that they have had tendencies of losing to the Gold Coast up there over the last few years. So they'll be taking this one as a pretty serious one. But if the Geelong outfit that we know, I reckon they'll be able to get over the line up there. But it's going to be a battle of two teams that really need a win. Gold Coast to prove to himself that against the former premiers and a really quality team that they can get over the line and will himself to, and Geelong just to settle the ship.
Waitley on SEN.
I think we want to stamp out of the game, and it's not a good look. And I'm pleading guilty and cop my 4 weeks and move on. It's obviously something in the game has been heavily documented as of late, the concussions and all that stuff. So I think it's something we do need to stamp out of the game, and hopefully players can know to let go and move on.
Nathan Broad outside Punt Road last night as he was handed a 4 week suspension by the AFL Tribunal. Luke Hodge, what did you think of that? It keeps it in line with two previous dangerous tackles that caused concussion. So no rise in the, I guess, the heightened environment that we're in right now.
Yeah, I think that was the minimum that he would have got. I know the AFL went for four. Richmond went for three, trying their luck. But I think he did everything right post that incident. He rang up here, the care factor, and people say, oh, players can just do that to try and show a bit of sympathy. But speaking to a lot of people that know him, he's a genuine good guy. He plays a physical style of football, and he crossed the line. He put his hand up. But it is right from the AFL point of view as far as stamping that out of the game. We want parents to sit back and go, this is a game that's safe for my child. And if they're getting tackled, no one's going to be able to dump them on their head like we saw on the weekend. So I'm happy with the 4 weeks. He didn't try and get out of it. He put his hand up. So well done by him in that case, and probably just lucky there wasn't a more serious incident apart from the concussion, which is very serious as we know.
In our word association, Hodgie, Melbourne, are they gone without Max? Is there a period of adjustment when the captain's going to be absent for a lengthy stint?
Oh, there's no doubt that being such a important player from over the years, the old saying is you walk a little bit taller when he's beside you because you know what you're going to get from him. He's going to compete. He's going to have opportunities at goals. The blokes around him are better because Max is such an influential player. He makes them better. The only thing is they got in Grundy to be a two-man tower, one forward, one ruck. And now they're probably a good thing because Grundy, he's a pretty experienced player when you lose your main ruckman to bring him in just a solo ruck. The question is for me is with his fitness, his last game was round six last year before the first of this year. So how is his fitness to ruck by himself? Because winning the hitouts is no issue, but it's that connection. It's the fitness to do it by himself for a long period of time. Is McDonald the backup, but how much can McDonald do to give him that rest? But it's the connection with your midfielders. So they were plus 8 or 9 hitouts on the weekend, but they lost the clearances by 28. That's a massive one. And at quarter time, there was, I think there were one or two hitouts more than the Lions, but the Lions had 7 hitouts to advantage to Melbourne 0. So you sort of look back and go, that's going to come with time. It might just need to be fast-tracked a little bit more, because considering he's going to be the solo ruckman for a fair while now.
How long do you reckon it takes? How long does it take to get that the nuance and the connection that you're talking about?
Players are so smart these days, and they do so much of those extra craft. I guess the saying is mastering your craft. So what he'll be doing and what he should be doing since he walked in the door, and he'll definitely be doing more of it now, is making sure, whether it's even if it's in the change rooms before weights, it'll be just tapping it to your midfielders, doing as much of that connection stuff as you can, doing it at training, post-training, but it's just trying to fast-track that stuff, because it's so important. You can get your hand on the ball, but if you're not getting the clearances away and playing the ball in your forward line so you can set up, we know how dangerous Melbourne are once they get the ball in the forward 50, can set up behind the ball. They failed in that on Thursday night, apart from the last 10 minutes, and that's what cost them the game. You saw how damaging they were in that last 10. The first 3.5 quarters, they couldn't do that, and that's what cost them.
What did you think of Alistair Clarkson and his cuddly demeanour down? Did you ever see that, Luke? He was the man who was punching holes in the wall.
Oh, no, you see glimpses of his anger and his frustration, but what you do is you see passion. Sometimes bad passion in that punching in the wall, but he's an affectionate coach. There's no doubt about it. Whenever he comes to my house, he was there about 4 weeks ago, he picks up the kids, he gives them a cuddle, he gives them a rough. Like he's an affectionate, passionate person. And what you saw there is a bloke who had a tough 3 years at Hawthorn, 12 months out of the game. He's just over the moon that he's back in the game he loves with the club that he started. And they've probably surprised a few people. And what he's looking at now, going, hang on, maybe this list is a little more fast-tracked than where we thought. And he's enjoying the ride, and he's trying to show the guys after two or three really, really tough years that, hey, football is a good game. If you do the right things, you can celebrate at times. And he's just riding the celebration with the rest of the side.
If you offered Sam Mitchell one win for the season, do you think he would spend it this Saturday?
What I've known, and I know a lot of it's made up of the Sam v. Clarke. It's not North v. Hawthorn. It's Sam v. Clarke this weekend. Any coach that leaves a former team. I know when Fakes came up against Hawthorn and Clarko, he was passionate to win that game. I know when Bevo did, and when the battles of Hawthorn and Richmond because of Clarko and Dimmer. When we played Port Adelaide the first couple of times, when Clarko just came across from Port Adelaide, Hawthorn v. Port Adelaide, Clarko wanted it that much to beat the former team. So, yes, there's a little bit more history with these two coaches, but it's the old fact of Clarko wouldn't mind getting a win, but Sammy wouldn't mind outdoing the master on their first battle against each other.
And stitched into the state rivalry, so the showdown and the derby, that's always there. These feel heightened. Like, West Coast have the chance to completely ruin Fremantle's season. I have no idea whether they're good enough or not, but I can imagine that would be a highly motivating factor.
I think when you jump like Fremantle did last year with the team, with the younger midfield, you do catch a lot of people. The second year round, people understand what kind of style you're going to play, and they scout against you a lot more than what they did the previous year, because they've got 12 months of games that they can look at to find out your weaks, your strengths and your weaknesses, how to go against you. Teams obviously doing that to Fremantle. And as you said, there's no bigger game for West Coast right now to try and sit there and go, well, we're the ones that were touted to be 17th. Can we make this team the big rivals zip three? They'll be looking at that. Without a doubt, and I've still got Fremantle because of the football that we know they can play, but tell you what, she's going to be a pretty fierce game.
And the showdown has that element to it as well. So Porter 1-1, Adelaide 0-2, they've had patches, but that's not enough. And it feels like for the two coaches in particular, this is really important.
It is. I'm looking at Port Adelaide's the big one for me. I'm looking at going, we had questions leading into that first game against Brisbane, and they answered it. And we thought, well, hang on, these boys are here to play. Was that just a once-off, the first game of the round to tick it off and go, oh, we're content? Because what they showed up last week, even though it was against Collingwood, who everyone sits back and go, Collingwood are the real deal. Some of the efforts from some of the Port Adelaide players are not up to scratch. And again, I know the showdown, that's going to bring out more of a competitive mindset. It's at home, it's against the arch rivals, but if they produce some of the efforts like they did last week and lose the game, there's going to be a lot of pressure come for Port Adelaide this week.
What a stacked start to the season it's been. It's
the first three rounds, Jared, have been absolutely amazing. With trying to do your tipping this year, good luck, because the first three rounds have been so tough.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure out of 18, oh no, I might be half, so I'm just on the cusp of fail.
I wouldn't want to give an answer of what mine is at the moment, because I don't think I'd be half.
Terrific, Hodgie. Good on you. Lovely to get your perspective on the leaders right across the competition.
Thank you, Jared. Have a good week.
Luke Hodge gets us underway on a Wednesday. The Peter Bowl scenario reads to me like one of the great travesties in Australian sport. There's a detailed interview and analysis front page of The Age today from the chief sports writer of the SMH, Andrew Webster. Andrew's just finished on SEN in Sydney. Andrew, great to have you on my program. Welcome.
Thanks, Jared. They're getting their money's worth out of me today.
We are indeed. So,
what's going on?
I feel like this is a travesty. I feel like the drug testing agencies have to be as good as infallible, because this scenario is a disaster for the individual athlete. You've sat with Peter Boyle and you've run a full analysis, which is excellent today. Just give me your read on it right now.
I agree. Like, I think we have to be also cautious of, like, these are independent tests, though, that have been engaged by his very aggressive lawyer in the US. So until, as I've sort of called for in the Herald and the Age today, there's further investigation, whether that's a Senate inquiry or some deeper probe into what's happened with Sports Integrity Australia and their processes. But if some of that is, if what's that been alleged is proven, I think, like, it's, as you said, it's got to go down as one of the great injustices in Australian sport. Not like, I know we all, everyone was focusing on the leak after the A sample result was given to him. So that was bad enough. But now if the leak of the A sample that may not even have been positive is proven to be true, then I think that you're right. It's an absolute travesty.
How did you find Peter himself, Andrew?
Very calm. I found him very calm and engaging. He was, I think he was trying to put on a bit of a brave face before we turned on the tape recorder and went on the record. I do find it quite remarkable that he's not seeking compensation at this stage. And his lawyer reiterated that fact when I spoke to him throughout this sort of whole process in the last couple of days. I think he just wants Sports Integrity Australia to be better and to answer some of the questions that have been thrown up by what's been reported today. So I found him, yeah, quite calm. I don't think he's that keen to, like he said to me, that the Nationals start the end of this week, and he could have gone up there and proved a point and has a point to prove, particularly to some people in Athletics Australia who he feels has let him down. But I got just the impression, Jared, that all he wants to do is get back running, but also to make sure that the Sports Integrity Australia and the lab that analyses their doping tests are better.
What's the formal status of the Sports Integrity Australia investigation, Andrew? Is it, just to read your piece, that's not finalised yet?
No, I think, and this is the reason why they've come out so strongly today, Paul Greeny's lawyer and Peter Bowe, because it's an ongoing investigation that is still going. Now, Sports Integrity Australia indicated to both of them that they would interview both of them at some stage in March. So they've got a day to go to before they can, but they haven't heard anything from them. And I think that's the frustration from Peter Bowl, is that, you know, he's tried to be transparent and upfront throughout this whole investigation, but they still haven't come to him. And as Paul Green said on Channel 9 this morning, that's because there's nothing to investigate. So if that's the case, and while I still have an investigation open into him, he's going to have that cloud over his head. So I completely empathise with what he's trying to do, because you know better than I do. The stain of doping is pretty hard to get off. Until they close that investigation and he gets an apology, it's still going to be there, isn't it?
It is. So it's hard to imagine an athlete being subjected to a worse scenario than this.
No, not at all. Although I do feel like he certainly feels vindicated by the independent testing that we've reported today, and even when the B sample came back as atypical, it was, you know, it's another step in the process to clearing his name, but there's still a lot of water to go under the bridge before it's finalised.
What do you think the national reaction to him when he races next in front of us on a big stage will be?
I think there'll be overwhelming support for him. This is what I don't get, right? It's like he has been such a great story for Australian sport, but also Australian athletics, which needs its superstars to emerge. And we saw what he did at Tokyo. We saw what he did in Birmingham. And I just think the way that he's been so shabbily treated, it sort of defies belief. Now, I know that no athlete deserves special treatment, particularly when it comes to doping. But, no athlete should go through what he's gone through. And I think the public sentiment is all with him. So, yeah, we sort of need to see what Sia will do. I also think it's a little bit of a cop-out from Sports Integrity Australia. Because it's a government agency, they can't say anything publicly about those things. And I think they really need to make a statement about it today. Like, I went to both them and the Australian Sports Drug Testing Laboratory yesterday for comment, and they both skied their hands. We're a government agency, we can't say anything. So I do think that's a bit of a cop-out.
I agree with you entirely. The lack of transparency out of that agency on a whole range of fronts over a period of time is troubling. It's just a catch-all for them, and I don't think it serves the landscape, and it certainly doesn't serve each individual story well. What level of oversight is there? Do you think there will ultimately be some form of government inquiry into this?
I'm not sure. That's sort of the follow up today, and I think someone from Canberra should be speaking to this at some point throughout the day. If it's not a Senate inquiry, at least some sort of probe into the processes of what goes on with doping. The other thing is, Jared, is like EPO is a bit of a different one because it's such a subjective test, and there's criticism about the tests that have taken place, and that's almost sort of the nub of what Peter Bowles' lawyer is arguing, is that that these tests have been incorrectly read, essentially, which is a fairly damning claim. But I think there's a bigger issue about EPO testing and whether the current the test that they rely on, the SARS-PAGE test, is the right one. So it's a whole sort of dialogue there that needs to take place.
They're excellent pieces, Andrew. Great work. They're terrific reads, and thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Jared.
Andrew Webster is the chief sports writer for the Sydney Morning Herald. It's featured in The Age today on the front page, and Andrew's analysis inside.
Now, back to Whateley.
What a performance from Charles Leclerc. Magic in qualifying. A dominant drive. Fastest lap. 25 world championship points. The man from Monaco, magic in Melbourne, Charles Leclerc wins the Australian Grand Prix for Ferrari. The Scuderia is back on top in Formula One, and they're doing it in dominant style.
Richard Crail there calling the final stages of last year's Formula One Grand Prix for Channel 10. He will do that again. Our interviews throughout the week around the GP are for Ozito Tools, powering DIYers all day, every day. Richard Crail, it's great to have you on the program.
Good morning, Jared. How are you?
I'm well. What's your sense of anticipation and excitement as you head to the airport about to fly into Melbourne for the F1 Grand Prix?
It's one of the great days. It's one of the great days. I love heading to Melbourne for the Grand Prix. Now, I am hand on heart an Adelaidean, and it took a while to get over losing this race, Jared, but now it is just the perfect place for it. It's a city that embraces it. It's a city that the scale and scope of Formula One is perfectly suited for, and what this event has evolved into becoming is extraordinary, and the fact that it's now going 26 years and stronger than ever, you have to say, is just a massive testament to Andy Westacott and his team that put this together every year. So I'm excited. Can't wait to get there. There's so many stories and things to get through this weekend that's going to make it another captivating weekend of sport.
In the suite of motorsport events that you attend and that you broadcast across a year, is this the pinnacle? Where do you sit it?
I think by its very nature being a Formula One race, it is. And whether you're a racing car driver, whether you're a caller, whether you work in PR, or whether you're one of the many thousands of volunteers who fly the flags for free every weekend in the cold and rain, usually making sure the drivers are safe, you want to be at a Grand Prix. It's the pinnacle of the sport across all levels. So to have the opportunity to play in that field, even if it's only once a year, is really special. And as someone who was a Formula One fan before they were a fan of supercars and local motorsport, it's really cool to be part of that and to have that opportunity just to go and poke your head in these garages and see these people and how the high end of town operates.
There's a really clear resurgence that you can mark through ticket sales. You can see it in the spectacular that is created around it. It went through a few years where it felt like it was in decline, and now it's probably roared to record levels. And that's not just a Melbourne phenomenon, I take it. What's your read on where it has soared to right now?
It's at another level. I'm not sure it's ever been as big. It's always been a global sport, but for a long time it was quite backwards in the way it operated and was very old school, which in many ways was quite endearing, but it got to a point where the overlap between operating old school and needing to keep up to the times sort of tilted firmly in the favour of it needed an overhaul. And when Bernie Eccleston, who had run the sport with an iron fist for three or four decades, finally let go and the American media group Liberty Media came in and bought the sport, they just injected a huge amount of life into it. They embraced the social media and they began that storytelling. And you know better than anyone, Jared, that sport's about stories. The competition's one thing, but it's the story and the the narrative behind it that makes it so compelling. It's the reason we go to the footy and watch the games every week, while we watch a test match and things like that. So what they've done is the storytelling. And part of that came through the Netflix program, through Drive to Survive, which has been so unbelievably popular. And that's just brought a whole new group of people into Formula One that didn't perhaps understand these stories. So you get the bite-sized chunk on the streaming service. And if you get 50% of those people sit down and watch a Grand Prix on a Sunday night here in Australia, then that's an enormous boost to your audience. And it's just built these personalities up. And we now know about Max Verstappen and Oscar Piastri and Daniel Ricciardo more than we ever have. So I think that's part of the reason why this thing's gone so crazy.
How tight is the grip of Red Bull right now on the competition side of it?
Yeah, they're as good as any team has been in the last decade of the sport. And we lived through those 7 years where Lewis Hamilton swept all before him. He won every race. He dominated the sport. 7 world championships. The list goes on. One in there for Nico Rosberg for good measure. They're at that level. But what I think is the redeeming factor is not the right word, but the asterisk near it is that the sport is very different now in terms of the competition and the way it's managed than it was even 5 years ago. So there's a lot more equivalency in it. And the sport is designed by its regulations that the more you succeed, the less opportunity you've got to continue that domination. And there's more given to the lower teams. It's a bit like the draft in a way, where the lower teams can catch up. They've got more money. They've got more resource. They can spend more time developing their car than the team that's winning. So will we enter into a prolonged period of domination? I don't think so, but they are a race team that's efficient. They've got a really good car. They've got 2 great drivers, and they're operating at a very high level. The only question mark I'd put on that, Jared, is that there's some needle between their drivers.
Yes.
And Sergio Perez beat Max Verstappen last time out in Saudi Arabia, and it's caused some tension, and there's been some stuff bubbling over from last year as well. And Red Bull's track record of managing 2 great drivers is not spectacular. And Aussie fans will remember that well with Mark Webber versus Sebastian Vettel a decade ago, where they ultimately came to blows towards the end of their relationship. So that's probably the only question mark over this domination from Red Bull is, can they manage the friendly fire between their teammates?
Yeah, and that's had a long history of intrigue. You're quite right. What's the lot of Lewis Hamilton right now? So it's something to see a long-term champion who's just a bit of a battler for the moment.
Yeah, and it does show that you could be the best driver in the world, but if you don't have the machinery, you're not going to win races. And right now, Mercedes don't have the machinery to compete with Red Bull, and Lewis is now in the longest losing streak of his career, which is remarkable because he's won more Grand Prix than any other driver in the history of the sport, including the great Michael Schumacher. So, yeah, it's a strange scenario. The other thing that Lewis has got to deal with is a mighty teammate in the form of George Russell, who for the last 2 years has been, if not consistently quicker, has been more than a match. And that's not something that Lewis has had to deal with a lot in his career. So that's a huge challenge for him. Watching the rebound for that team is going to be spectacular. They are the most successful race team of the last decade. I cannot see them staying down for long, and they will throw everything they can at this car to try and develop it and bring it forward. And when you've got someone like Lewis Hamilton steering the ship, you know you've got the organic component right. It's up to the brains behind the scenes to give him the machinery to do the job.
Australia has involvement. It's the changing face. So Oscar Piastri is a name that we know well. I feel like this week serves a big purpose in introducing him to the mainstream Australian sporting public.
It's remarkable. This is his first car race on Australian soil.
Right.
Full stop. He's actually never raced a car. His last race in Australia was something like 8 years ago at the Oakley Kart Club in go-karting. So yet to race a racing car on Australian soil. And that's pretty remarkable when you're given that he is now in the very pinnacle of the sport. But yeah, it's really exciting. Formula One, as you know, Jared, is a generational game. And this weekend I'm lucky to work with Damon Hill, who was the first son of a former world champion to win a world championship again. Formula One, and Oscar is an example of why it's such a generational game. when Fernando Alonso, who's on the grid this year in his 40s and still as fast and fiery as ever, when he made his Australian Grand Prix debut in 2001 for Minardi, which had just been bought by Paul Stoddart at the time, Oscar Piastri hadn't been born. So he was born 33 days after Fernando Alonso made his debut, and they'll start together this weekend. It is a kind of coming out weekend for Oscar to show what he's capable of to the Aussie public. Hasn't been a great start to McLaren's season. They're another team searching for some results, but Oscar will endear himself. He already has, but when the Aussie fans get to see him in person, I think they're going to revel in him. He's a great personality. He's a character, very engaging, great with the fans. But best of all, he's a very, very good racing car driver, and I hope we get to see some of that talent if he's given the right car this weekend.
And Richard, give us an insight into your job. So what are the demands and the disciplines of calling an F1 race?
I love the challenge. And as a Formula One fan, I religiously sit up every Sunday night and watch the Grand Prix throughout the course of the year. So you follow and build up that knowledge, and with a passion for the sport, you naturally take close notice in what's going on. But it is a challenge to come in for that one event of a year and not completely and utterly drown yourself in all the minutiae that happens in Formula One. And it's such a complex sport. There's so many moving pieces in it. It's about finding that balance, I think, for mine, in telling all the stories that need to be told. So telling the Oscar Piastri story or the Max Verstappen versus Sergio Perez story. But at the same time, trying to convey to an Australian audience that only gets Formula One once a year and usually has to watch it at a pretty rough time slot, late in the night or early in the morning Sunday. It's about conveying that excitement and the level of what we're witnessing, that this is the absolute pinnacle of world motorsport. These are 20 of the best drivers in the world with the best resourced teams and incredible technology. So for mine, it's about trying to convey some of that and some of the grandeur and the special nature of Formula One. And that's what I get out of this weekend, and just try and enjoy it. And I feel like if I'm enjoying it, then hopefully the audience watching along will be too.
Well, we look forward to sharing it with you, Richard. The very best of luck with the call. It's great to catch up. Enjoy what's about to unfold.
Thanks, Jared. Always a pleasure.
Richard Crail, the coverage of the Formula One Rolex Australian Grand Prix gets underway on Friday, live and free on Network 10 and Ozito, powered by Einhell, German-designed quality driving, power and performance. For DIYers, all day, every day, our Grand Prix coverage as this week unfolds. If everything goes to plan, fingers crossed, Sir Jackie Stewart is going to join me on tomorrow's program. So a bit of a treat in the week of the Formula One Grand Prix in Australia.